So IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of CCG with full IPR agreement signed. I'm including a link to joining the CCG. And it's free. You may have to request a W3C account or a W3 account first, a web account. This is the link to do that. And so after you have that, you can just follow the previous link to join the group. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the following location. I'm going to paste it into IRC again. And we use IRC to cue speakers during the call. I see quite a few of you on the IRC channel. Let us know if you have any questions about that. We can point you to information. All attendees should type present plus, no space in between, to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. And also in IRC, type Q plus, that's the letter Q plus, and no space in between, to add yourself to the queue. With an optional reminder, you can say Q plus to mention something, and the word to is required if you do it that way. If you're not on IRC, simply speak up and ask to be put on the queue. And in general, please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always Q plus again. Okay, the next part we need to do is get a scribe volunteer. Let me look at who we have on the call. I think for this group, we'll get a better sense over time who are the regular attendees, and we can get we can just sort of rotate duty. If we have any volunteers for today, it would be much appreciated. Okay,
I could give it a shot. This is Jim Goodell.
Jim, thank you. Yeah, and just speak up if you have any questions about how it works. In general, whoever's typing, and you'll know in general because they would be on the queue, so you'll see their alias, so you say, for example, alias said something. I'm typing in IRC right now, like that. And but yeah, please let us know if you have any questions about it. And okay, let's get to introductions and reintroductions. I see a few new people here today. If you are here and new, then, actually, I see we have a queue. One second. That is Nate. Nate?
Hey, this is Nate. I'm just saying thanks, Jim, for scribing this week. I could do next week if you'd like to prearrange that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, let's see. I'm seeing a few new people. Snow, can you introduce yourself to the group? He might just be in IRC, but not on the call. Actually, Alex Jackal, I'm not sure if you've introduced yourself to the group. Would you mind introducing yourself?
I think I did once, but that's fine. I'm happy to do that. Alex Jackal, I'm Bardic Systems. I work a lot with a lot of the standards bodies, particularly PESC and A4L, and I'm doing a lot of work with the T3 network right now, and my focus is on, right now it's been on credentials and competencies, and so I look forward to participating in this group and participating with you all in the various other endeavors we're doing around this.
Thank you, and that's right. We certainly see each other in a lot of different groups, so we want to make sure that everything we're doing here is aligned and we're not repeating or repeating effort. So it's great to have you here. Simone, can you introduce yourself?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. Hello, everyone. My name is Simone. I'm calling in from Italy. I've been doing work around interoperability and student data standards across Europe and North America, and so I guess with an interest to keep the conversation global. In the U.S., I've been active in PESC and IMS and following the work, the orchestration of the T3 Innovation Network more recently. I'm a big fan of open badges and glad to be part of the group.
That's great. Thank you, Simone. And actually, I was talking with Greg. I think we may want to get you to present in a call soon, because we want to make sure that we're covering not just U.S.-centric standards. And I know everyone has it in mind, but we know that you've been thinking more deeply about that space for a while. So it would be good to hear from you on some of the efforts that you're familiar with more, you know, outside of what we may be exposed to. So thanks for joining. And I think if we don't have anyone else, any other new people or anyone who wants to reintroduce.
Okay. So, Kim, Chris Houston, I believe you are now on audio. Is that correct?
Yep. Sorry, I joined a few minutes late. I had a little difficulty trying to find the number. This is Chris Houston. I'm with eLumen and one of the co-chairs for the CLR with IMS. And, looking forward to hearing more about the verifiable credentials as well. And, passionate about open badges and IMS standards. Happy to be here.
Great. Thank you, Chris. It's great to have you. Okay, I think we did our preview stuff with these introductions, rear introductions. So yeah, with that, I think we're ready to turn over to Greg Nadeau, and he's going to talk about the setup is what's inside the credential envelope. So the credential envelope we think of as this verifiable claims wrapper, but in terms of what goes inside of it, there's been a lot of work happening, a lot of it through IMS and CLR and various other groups in terms of how do you precisely represent some kind of accomplishment, et cetera. And so Greg is going to take us through some of the work that's happening. And Greg, did you have a link that you wanted to share for your slides?
Yes, I just did.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, so everyone, if you notice the link that Greg added, just pull up that presentation. And Greg, you can just talk us through, when you're moving slides, just tell people move to slide 3 or whatever. And Jim, while he's presenting, so the slide deck is in the transcript, so feel free to just scribe lightly for any slide content, because people will be able to see it themselves. With that, Greg, go ahead.
So what I put a link in is a general set of slides entitled Education 3.0 Research Network, because it's sort of my master slide deck that I keep all aspects of things in. So we're going to talk, I guess, mostly about what goes into the envelope, and how the IMS CLR and Open Badge suggest some strategies for what goes in the envelope. I had actually thought that, Chris, you might be able to present, after I did, your example that you shared at IMS, even though this piece of it is still moving, but I think part of what I think we want to share is that there's a level of complexity that we're attempting to standardize for what goes inside the envelope when it is an academic record that I think can be very helpful to this community.
Sure.
So in the slides, you know, you can see people can go at their own pace and read in their own pace about Education 2.0 and the Education 3.0 research network, et cetera. That's really context for, I think we can pretty much go right into the slides on, hold on, let me just get there. Jump right to slide 42. Can someone confirm that's working?
Yep, that one says CLR, ILR. Yep.
Okay. So in slide 43, you know, just the background of people are aware of CLR and Open Badge, and then how ACRO, which is the American Association of Collegiate Registrars, created this idea of an extended transcript. And Nate, feel free to correct any of this history that I'm getting wrong, you know, but that sort of what gave birth to CLR. And in parallel, you guys are doing your work in verifiable credential, and the military has been doing work on the universal learner record. So I think what Kim and I and a lot of other folks on this call have been talking about is bringing together sort of a recommended practices for how all of these things can work together. And that's really what's in slide 44. A standard set of recommended practices for how these and other relevant standards can interact together to accomplish this thing, a learner record. So slide 45 is a view of the extended transcript as it was originally conceived. Slide 46 begins to lay out the key structure, the key concepts of the comprehensive learner record, that in that the assertion is wholly distinct from the achievement. So if you were to stick with the envelope metaphor, in many ways you'd put the achievement on the outside of the envelope because there's no PII in it. Now that's a little bit kind of massacres the metaphor to a certain degree because it could be relatively extensive information that you wouldn't typically put on the outside of an envelope. But the point is that the key dividing line is that the assertion has all PII data, the achievement has linked data that should be, that is typically as widely available as possible. So slide 47 is just sort of a conceptual picture of how that would be applied to, in this case, Georgia, integrating multiple K-12 achievement assertions about computer science, instruction of computer science into a comprehensive learner record. So slide 48 through 55 lays out some of the key concepts of CLR. Again, you see this idea that each thing has an achievement and has an assertion, right? That's kind of the key structure. So as we start unpacking this envelope into these set of nested achievement assertions, we've begun to investigate a lot of the inherent complexities of standardizing that space so that they can be semantically understood across jurisdictions. And so that typically starts with two things, the identity of the learner and the issuer, and then the learning targets that they are on pathway to learn about and demonstrate achievement towards. The open ontologies. Now, I know that this audience is a very international audience across many different levels, so I'm trying to speak at the broadest, most abstract and generally relevant as possible. In the U.S. K-12, which is my background, where I come from, we have state academic standards in each of the states. And there was a time that they were converging towards something called the Common Core of Learning. They're now in the process of diverging. The relationships between all of those 128,000 academic standards is an ontology. As we get more in higher ed, it becomes a little more cloudy, where a lot of the ontological assertions or achievement descriptions are inherent to the course syllabus, sort of implied course objectives, often almost on purpose, not comparable. So there certainly is a robust tradition within research institutions of doing something unique, something sui generis just in that area. And so the idea of my course objectives relate 63% to your course objective is sometimes less clear. But that's a lot of the ideas that, you know, inside this envelope is something that machines can act on. It's not just a data blob. It's a thing that machines can act on, and they can parse and they can translate through crosswalks to generate services inside of new tools in the local jurisdiction. So slide 56 is the logical model that lays out the main structure of CLR. What's been so interesting recently is that Chris and I and my team and Oscar from APHIS and Jared from Houghton Mifflin, we've all been working with the standard for, you know, a couple of years now, and now we're implementing. And it kind of turns out that we're all implementing in different ways. A lot of the semantic meaning we have the fields for, but what we're doing now, which I think, you know, I thought I was going to be doing more screen sharing, so I don't have all of the links set up to be shared. But what I talked to Kim about is really kind of, you know, maybe I can come back in some other period to share, is basically a spreadsheet where each row is a achievement assertion record. And so it lets us now take very concrete examples, first describe the scenario, and then fill in the columns with relevant information. So it lets us get at some of these very complex things of like, okay, so in Broward County, where we're where my team is doing research on this, we're looking at the standard thing, which is, well, starting with, there's a grade asserted by that results from a teacher's grade at the end of a term. And even the question of, well, who is the issuer? Is the issuer the teacher, or is the issuer the school district? And what is the relationship between those? What happens when it's an after-school provider if the district does or doesn't endorse that? Who is the issuer, and what is the endorsement, and what is the evidence? So there's a set. It turns out that a lot of what we originally thought, that there's, you know, pretty much there's an issuer and there's a learner, is actually not complex enough. There are other actors in these assertions that need to be standardized in their modeling as well. The exact relationship between the achievement description, which is the general non-PII thing, what in badges we would call a badge class, and this world of linked data like CASE and Credential Engine, is also being worked out right now in terms of getting a bunch of different companies to agree on what's the best way to do that and then modeling it in example JSON. So, Chris, I could go in to talk about slide 59, you know, Broward, what we're doing there. Maybe I'll just kind of end with that and then open it up, Chris, for you to share your side. And then, you know, in Broward, what we're doing is, you know, orange on the left is how the achievement assertions are created from the legacy student information system in traditional transcript data, from Pinnacle, their grade book, as a set of badge assertions, and then from, actually it says Con there, but it shouldn't be, from Mastery Connect, Instructure's Mastery Connect, on the more granular assertions that are derived from diagnostic assessments. So all that goes into this.
I'm sorry, which slide are you on? Is it 59?
59, yeah.
Okay, so this slide is very interesting. Everyone, I thought this might be a lot for people to take in. So could you talk through this one kind of slowly, because it's got a lot of interesting stuff.
Sure. So on the left side in the full orange is what Broward County Public Schools currently has. Broward County is the sixth largest school district in the United States. It's got 280,000 kids. It's the city of Fort Lauderdale and associated areas. They have a legacy student information system where it says BCPS SIS. It creates traditional transcript data that currently is parsed out in a sort of a PESC format. All of that information will be parsed into a learning ledger using the CLR structure. That's the first arrow that's going into that box. The second arrow going into that box comes from the gradebook. This is where teachers can make additional assertions. Typically, you know, we think of it sort of as a badge level. It's probably not the most granular. It's where we would capture teacher judgment, looking across a set of evidence, whether or not that teacher thinks that that student is algebra ready or has mastered a kind of mid-level domain. The most granular, the bottom orange arrow, comes from Instructure's Mastery Connect, which is an assessment tool. So they will construct assessments that will have items associated with particular granular learning standards where very granular competency assertions can be made. So all of that goes into this learning ledger, a centralized learning ledger that has all the credentials, badges, and skill mastery in it. That learning ledger then can share, and this is where I would see, you know, we want to put it in a package, you know, blue arrow coming out of orange thing, get CLR, right? This is where the learner gets all of their assertions into their wallet and then controls most all future access. Now, because BCPS was the initial publisher and issuer, any time that the learner shares green with Broward College or any other entity, then it's verifiable back to Broward County Public Schools. Gray is the other things that the learner's got going on in their life, because they're not just a student in Broward County. They also are getting some community tutoring, and they're doing other things. All of that can also go into their blue wallet, and through their life, they will accumulate more and more information in that blue wallet from multiple publishers and issuers. So I'm sure people have a lot of questions. I mean, we all do.
Yes. We have a big queue lined up. So is it okay if we pause for a few questions and then we can – I know you mentioned Chris Houston, I think, had something else, but I want to work through some questions first and then we can resume with the rest.
Sure.
Great. So let's see. Actually, I added myself to the queue a few times. Let me see. Actually, I have to act myself to see what my question was. I think the first one I wanted to mention for the people more familiar with verifiable credentials is that, so when you look at some of the previous slides, one of them was showing something like the CLR data model, and there's recipient profile information, like maybe address and things like that. One thing that's interesting, though, is there's already work happening in IMS to start aligning with recipient decentralized identifiers. There's a GitHub issue proposing to add recipient DID support in Open Badges 2.1, and so it's starting as sort of a lightweight, but it's the precedent is already being set, and I imagine we could also attempt to get something like that in CLR, meaning, you know, if you add DIDs, they have these properties that we like about verifiable credentials, being able to prove control over it, and in theory, minimizing privacy. So I wanted to mention privacy concerns. So I wanted to mention that as a, you know, way that these standards are already starting to align. Greg, did you have anything you wanted to add on that? Because I have a question right after that.
Well, just briefly, you know, Nate, I think, is on, and what we talked about at the Credential Summit a couple weeks ago is that what Badges does with DIDs is what CLR should do with DIDs and a bunch of other things. You know, I think it is the intention that we keep Open Badge and CLR extremely, extremely aligned going forward. Yes.
Great. And I had the next question I had. So you mentioned a lot of work is happening. You know, there's some very complex data modeling happening here. Where would we go to, say, if we have examples we want to propose for, you know, how would this look in that data model? Where is a good place for people to, you know, sort of, like, whether it's joining mailing lists or things like that?
You know, I mean, look, you can join IMS and you can become a contributing member. And I'm happy to, with Chris, come back here, you know, with some frequency and include people here in this process as well. So the answer may just be here. You know, we don't want to take up all of your agenda, but it seems like a relevant thing to do. And, you know, we can certainly bring, you know, next time I'll have more links prepared to share for the templates. And, you know, and frankly, we'll have some better examples at that point because it's a little fast moving right now. It would probably be good to wait another week or two or longer even to have something that's a little more settled to bring back. But certainly we can at any point come back and share that.
Great, thank you. And I think actually we'll probably need to have you back anyway because we're having a lot of discussion, I noticed, still working through the queue. Alex, I think I had you on the queue just to note that we're in slide 59, but is there anything else you want to add now that you have the floor?
Only that there's a lot of this work is, I think a lot of the beauty of having so many of us involved in so many of these different work streams is that one thing we want to do is just make sure that we keep ourselves connected to these various work streams. It is a lot of work, right? And but, you know, Jim Goodell is on right now, and he works a lot with CEDS. You know, we're working with PEST. There's a bunch of work being done in the T3 Innovation Network to try and bind together some of this work so that verifiable credentials and the ID is being used across the board, and having PEST transcripts be able to be moved in as an ILR, and you know, the CLRs be able to move as an ILR. So I think we're trying to create as much of a universal effort on this that's not contradictory and not oppositional in order to make this happen. So common education data standards is what CEDS is. Which is Jim can talk about that if we want to just, you know, give a little brief thing on that. But that's my only point, and so I'll cede the floor to whoever's next on the queue.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to actually add Jim to the queue, and I'll scribe for him. We have, let me see who we have next, though. I think we have Nate next.
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to get on the mic to say thanks to Greg for coming and presenting some of the current work here. Also, to describe a couple of the technical details of consistency issues that we'll have to get over in the next, next units of time. One is that the Open Badges and CLR assertion data model look a little bit different from the verifiable credentials envelope. However, I think there is a pretty clean way to use the verifiable credentials envelope to expose the type of claim information that a Open Badges and CLR assertion is making. Right now in Open Badges and CLR, the assertion is the outer layer of a document, and then inside it is the link to or the definition of the achievement that is being asserted. And in verifiable credentials, the verifiable credentials envelope is that outer layer, and then the claim actually is it has an identifier for a recipient and then properties that are being claimed about them. You cannot claim a achievement definition directly like that, but what you can do is introduce a holds relationship to say that some recipient holds a particular achievement, and then using the verifiable credentials envelope, you can wrap in evidence and additional information, that sort of like what achievement level did someone get to against that achievement. So one example use case would be that there is an achievement that has a rubric associated with it, as many educational achievements do, and there are different performance levels that could be attained by a particular learner. When it comes time to assert that a learner has achieved that thing, you could make a verifiable credentials claim that a particular recipient identifier, such as a DID, holds a achievement definition and then also has an achievement level that is related to that achievement definition. So Kim and I did some work toward this idea several years ago, actually, at the Rebooting Web of Trust workshop in Santa Barbara. And so thanks, Kim, for posting the link that I also had in my clipboard to the example JSON of a couple years ago's version of how that looks in an open badges assertion.
Kim, if I could just add one quick thing there, and I put in the chat there, you know, not to put Nate on the spot, but Nate, I think, is a unique resource to understand this space and it's all of its dimensions. So, you know, Nate has agreed to put out kind of a starting point for us all to understand how best to integrate Open Badge, CLR, Case, Verifiable Credential, DID. I think that's the type of integration that we're looking to get in IEEE. There's one slide that I just wanted to point people's attention to, which shows kind of the table contents of this document that's coming to either slide 17. And you can see 5.3, the section that Nate is going to be hopefully helping to kind of drive. And there's other really good participation from some of, really, I think, the most thoughtful people about how to bring all of these standards together, you know, into one set of recommended practices.
Great, thank you. And I think the last person on the queue, I wanted to ask Jim to say a few words on CEDS, or the Common Educational Data Standards that was just mentioned. A lot of these terms are new to, you know, depending on people's background. So this is a good place for people to get familiar with all these efforts and the hard work happening. Jim, I'll scribe for you.
Sure. CEDS is a U.S. Department of Education supported initiative, but it's a community developed set of standards, and they focus on data vocabulary, it also getting into a bit into logical models and some models that are now being used in physical implementations for data at rest. CDS generally doesn't get into data transport side of standards, but one thing that it has been able to do is to stay connected with the various other standards initiatives, both U.S. and some non-U.S. standards, and been able to stay coordinated and pull it back concepts when something innovative is developed somewhere out in the field. And so the process of the CEDS developing standards has changed over time. Now it's completely an open source community. So if one player in the field or a standards organization comes up with something new that is valuable to the ecosystem, CEDS is eager for that group to submit it to the open source community so that CEDS reflects everything that's out there from early learning, K-12, post-secondary workforce, and also we can provide kind of translation in a way. We've been called Rosetta Stone, where things are slightly different from one standard to another. We can be that translation vehicle.
Thank you, Jim. And also, if there are any, I know that there's a draft document underway now with a lot of changes. If there's any links that you'd like to point people to get more information, feel free to drop them in IRC. Let's see how we're doing on time. So we still have 20 minutes left. I wanted to ask a question that probably has no good answer, and then, but maybe there will be discussion coming from that. And then, Jim, I'll turn back over to you and Chris Houston to you know, continue with the presentation. But the question I had is around, you know, looking at those data models, they're incredibly complicated. And, I mean, it's necessary, right? Because the process of defining all of these roles, I think a lot of us have experienced limitations in earlier versions of standards where you can't quite express the thing that you need to express. I think the thing for me that's challenging, and for those of us working on prototypes, is how we think longer term this might actually fit into, say, registrar workflows or things like that. Do we expect that, and if so, you know, do we, well, so one, do we expect that there would be some sort of readily available set of, you know, this class corresponds to this thing, you know, these competency definitions and blah, blah, blah. Like it will be this sort of preparation work that that makes it easier for registrars or whoever is administering these systems. And, you know, what, where is the work going into sort of what ultimately plugs up to the discoverable layer that a person creating credentials will interact with? So I think until, like for now, I think we're definitely kind of, I'll say on our own in a sense, like it's sort of Wild West. But over time, there will be these, you know, kind of more discoverable definitions. So one, like, how do we think that will happen? And any rough ideas are fine. But two, what are groups that are sort of the most promising for working on that? I noticed Jim is on the queue. I think he may be answering, responding to that. Jim, go ahead.
Yeah. My thought is that there are different kinds of data for different use cases. So registrars are interested in certain kinds of data. An employer might be interested in other kinds of data. And so I think that's the kind of resource that's really needed, is if the wallet needs to be universal, it needs to handle all of these different kinds of data for different use cases. And I think as we as a community need to develop those guidelines. And I think part of that will come out with the IEEE guide that Greg was talking about.
Yeah, that's great. Sorry, I missed out on scribing. I'm gonna backfill that. And I do want to check to see. Okay, so yeah. So Greg or Chris, is there anything else you want to move on to?
Chris, do you have? Did you drop your slide? Your link in?
I don't have a link to the chat. So I have a link I can share to the Google Slides, but I'm not sure how to get it to you guys. Is that something I can send to you, Greg, and then just if you can throw it in the chat?
Sure.
Chat. 1 second.
So while he's doing that, I'll give him an introduction. So Chris works for Illumin, works mostly in higher ed space. This is Chris, though, modeling some K-12 achievement assertions.
All right, so you probably should have it there. Just let me know.
Yep,
when you've got that in the chat, and I'll start. So yeah, just to kind of kick that off. So yeah, I'm primarily in the higher ed space. I'm also interested in the K-12 space. I've got an 8-year-old son. He got a report card last year, being in the first grade, and it's a competency-based report card. So the thinking was, as we test out the CLR model, you know, we wanted to make sure that we have enough representative data in order to test the model, and this is just sort of one of those. CASE is another, you know, spec that's involved with being able to define competency statements and, you know, URIs and things. This one does not have that. So this is just, I found the report card. I tried to then sort of transcribe it into or articulate it into the CLR format. So on slide, I guess it's slide 2, we're just looking at just a quick photocopy of the report card. It goes through, defines student performance levels, the school, the student, the grade, the teacher, and effort levels. It goes through and breaks it out by trimester, has, you know, this is for the subject of language arts, and it dives into writing and reading and things like that. So off to the left is actually the state standard, as I found out, but this is something that this particular school has adopted. So as you can see, there's just different marks for the different standards there. So off to the right, on the next slide, it should show sort of a, I guess, a view of the JSON in a way, where it's showing the object, the assertions, the associations, the learner, and the publisher. This would be the whole CLR object itself. It would have an issuer, which ends up being part of part of the assertion. And the achievement is sort of embedded in the assertion as well. But I think this whole thing would then work inside the envelope that we've been talking about. So one click forward, I actually articulated or expanded a little bit more to show you that there are 4 assertions within this example for the four writing standards that we see off to the left. Do one more click, and then I've expanded out the assertion to see the other objects and attributes inside. So again, this follows very closely to the open badges specification, but there are additional metadata fields in here as well and other objects. So expanding the assertion, we see the achievement. This happens to be a writing competency. About writes opinion pieces, introduces the topic, and it's being issued by this North Elementary for grade 1. The description for the results are really the available results. So it exceeds standard, at standard, approaching standard, or minimal progress. Those should be flipped the opposite way just by reading it like this, but and then it has the recipient, which matches the recipient for open badges, and then the result down below that, which in this case was at standard for that particular competency. Clicking it one more, it should say annotated at the top. And it should be left is the report card image, and on the right is the expanded assertion. I then started to basically just point out where everything is located between the example on the left and then the sort of view of the JSON on the right. So we've got the recipient. They're also the learner in this case. We've got the issuer asserted by. Then we've got our descriptions for the results, which would be the student performance levels. The name of each of these competencies is actually the name of the achievement in this case that's being asserted. The mark, which would be the results, which would be at standard for this particular one. And then the field of study in this case is language arts. There were a few different ways to model this, as Greg had said. So that's what we're trying to do at the moment, is actually move from potential to actual and be able to describe these in a consistent manner. I looked at, there was another section of this report card that actually just went into more like life skills. So I tried to do the same thing with that example. It does use the open badges mechanism for using an email and hashing it as well. So that's sort of called out there. And then, for trimester one, there's the results of consistently meeting that. There's a mathematics section. These are actually listing out the human code as well. So I wanted to capture that in an example. And then there's this other idea of being able to self-publish assertions. Once there's an assertion and it's verifiable, it should be able to be passed on from point A to point B and still be verifiable. So in some ways, the thought was the student or the learner could self-publish these after they've been asserted by a different issuer. So the idea there is being able to sort of publish your own CLR. There are associations as well. Associations in this case are used to describe a hierarchy or a graph, using is child of type of things, meaning maybe someone is in a program, and again, it's going to be a little higher ed focused, but if they're in a program, maybe they're taking a course. They have not finished their program yet, but they are, enrolled in it. Maybe they just finished a course. So the course completion could be an asserted achievement. That course may be made up of assessments or competencies, and those themselves can be asserted, all the way down to including the rubric type information, which is, again, where we are right now in terms of trying to articulate this in a way that works with the real data from the real world.
Chris, if I could just
go ahead.
So I just want to stress that there's probably 12 things that Chris presented that I'm not sure that I completely agree with yet, right? But that's kind of the exciting part, which is Chris came to this conclusion. We use the same information architecture, came to some different conclusions. Every other company came to some other conclusions. Now, it's not going to take us months in order to reconcile that. But it is sort of, and there's a real commitment. So we're just going to use this template to model these scenarios and then just keep on talking about it until we get to some consensus about using the scenarios in the same way, expressing the scenarios in the same way so that they could be semantically comparable across jurisdictions. Now, what Chris doesn't show here, as he said, which I think is a really important emphasis not to be lost, is this whole idea of case data, that the assertions are being made not just about text strings, but they're being made about linked data that can have comparisons. And that's what really makes this, ecosystem. That's what makes the data blobs really become information.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the idea here is to be able to report on these asserted achievements, but also using things like linked data, be able to get more information or more context about that. Being able to follow out those URIs to case and getting, the rubric, criterion, and so on and so forth.
And crosswalks to other frameworks.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
We have a couple of people on the queue. One, thank you very much. That was super helpful to see the comparison with the sort of, paper report card. So that's, yeah, it's really helpful to help. It's really helping things sort of click together. We have some people on the queue. I wanted to get a call on Nate.
Sure, thanks. So I just wanted to make a note about the evolution of the CLR standard and then how it will actually see implementation over the next couple of years. So for folks who are not IMS members, the stage of publication that this standard is at now is what they call candidate final public, which means that the draft is available for anyone, not just IMS members, to look at. You can go to imsglobal.org/CLR to get to the landing page where you can see all that stuff. But it has not yet been finalized and does not yet have conformance-tested implementations out there in the wild. IMS does require two implementations in order for a spec to go to the tab for a final vote, which is a pretty standard sort of procedure. It looks like there will be a few implementations in the publisher role in CLR, but one weak point that I've been concerned about is that I have not seen yet a company sign up to be a consumer implementation of CLR. And so the result of that is that maybe we have these publishers who are implementing their own bespoke and interesting, very complex unfoldings of the options and the possibilities in the CLR spec, but we don't actually have a force that keeps the implementation simple, which would be a consumer that needs to stay able to consume records from multiple different publishers. That's the sort of equilibrium that a standards ecosystem needs in order to be, you know, stay in balance and keep the balance between exploring all the different possibilities that we want to be able to cover and model with the spec versus ensuring simplicity that allows the cost of implementations to be low. From the Broward County work, I have seen that you know, consumer is sort of in scope. You know, it's in that slide 59 graph of where this data needs to flow, and so that's a project that has the potential to explore that part of the ecosystem. And then also, and one other note is IMS leadership has expressed support for the idea of compatibility with verifiable credentials. We need to explore with them what that actually means in practice. Because I think the several members of the technical working groups, Greg and Chris, who are here, myself, who contributes, we're interested in this idea, and to some degree, we understand what that's going to take. I don't think that technical knowledge is well distributed in terms of what is the actual framework for collaboration between these different groups that ensures that the compatibility will happen. One path that I think that we should probably look at is actual examples in working code that show how it can be done, as opposed to trying to just sort of envision it in advance.
Yeah.
These are great points. I wanted to call in Simone. I'd asked him to give us a quick comparison in terms of, you know, these are U.S.-centric bodies that we've been talking about. Everyone's interested in non-U.S. or, you know, outside of U.S., but Simone has more exposure. We're going to invite him back for more of a deep dive. Simone, could you give us some just a quick your thoughts on similar efforts in Europe?
Sure. So as far as I can remember, and this is probably back to 2007, this kind of work first happened in Europe within CEN. This is CEN. It's the European Standardization Body. And that work, so this is proper standardization work, produced a specification which is now known as ELMO, which stands for European Learner Mobility. And that is de facto a European norm, by all means. That specification really involved the contribution of some researchers from academia, but also some representatives from industry vendors. It didn't really see that much uptake until the European Commission decided to put some funds through the Erasmus Plus funding program behind a couple of projects. One is known as MREX, and that was mostly a pilot in the Nordic countries. And the other one, probably more popular, is the Erasmus Without Papers. Now, those were two co-financed projects. that have their own life, and it's typically short, 2-3 years. Before then, they hope to be picked up for adoption by industry. The most recent effort is this, the Europass project, which is a revamp of a platform that the European Commission produced 14 years ago, and effectively is going to produce a full-fledged digital credential platform as well as an e-portfolio platform for all citizens to be used. Within that effort, a new specification to describe credentials was produced, known as the Europass Digital Credential Infrastructure, EDCI. So, you know, we'll see what uptake that has. That latest initiative should be compliant with verifiable credentials in W3C terms. But that's still early stage. That project is supposed to launch publicly in May of this year. And I'm happy to articulate more in a future call.
Great. Thank you so much. And I notice we're at time, but I'll close on Alex Jekyll, who's the last person on the queue.
Yes, I just wanted to say that this is going to, I think it's this problem of not having people who are receiving the data is endemic to the entire electronic industry of information exchange. The PES transcript was a good example. The PES transcript is being exchanged in enormous volumes among higher education institutions, but a lot of times the data is not being accepted by the institution. They're just accepting the thing, turning it into a PDF and then printing it and looking at it, right? Or looking at it in an electronic form, but not actually taking the data and putting it into their data structures directly. So receiving is the hardest part of this. And I think also we have to acknowledge, as we talk about adoption, I think if we can create, there's an effort underway right now to try and create a wallet or an e-portfolio that can hold the various different forms of ILR that are going to emerge, whether it's the European credentials or the CLRs or PES transcripts or an employment record or an employment record from HR Open Standards, and therefore be able to hold those things, then those people who are ready to accept those particular data structures can then have a consistent way to get access to that. And so I think we're trying to solve that problem both in the abstraction, the standards-based side, and on the realistic, how do we get things going in the next year kind of side. So I think it's going to be an interesting next year or two as we work all these things out.
Great. Thank you. And thanks, everyone. This is a fascinating, very eye-opening call and great contributions from everyone. So I'll send out an agenda for next week coming up soon. And thanks, everyone, for joining. Talk to you soon.